This is Noah Schechter, writer of episode 620, Guillermo Rizal. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
During Lent, salty meats is my middle name. Welcome to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Agent Aaron Peterson, and I've never felt impaled by a unicorn, except maybe last week, but that does sound painful. Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss number 128 on The Blacklist, Guillermo Rizal.
You are married to a Hispanic woman.
Yeah.
How do you get Guillermo? Guillermo Rizal.
Got it. Written by Noah Schechter and directed by Court Hessler. Hey, Court Hessler directed this.
Yeah, I know. That was really cool. I saw his name come up. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. If you don't know, Court is the stunt coordinator.
Yeah, that's true.
We had an interview with him a few months back, right? So yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Over the summer, right? It was right before season six started.
I mean, that was a few months, right?
Yeah.
By the way, I take that back. I do know what it's like to be impaled by a unicorn, because that's exactly how I felt last week. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
He jests.
No, that's exactly what it felt like. Right up there.
That was one long weekend.
That was a long weekend. Apparently, I'm just going to keep my opinions to myself. This is going to be a boring podcast. We're just going to listen to Troy. More exciting, because theories abound.
Because I get to talk this week instead. That's what people are saying. Aaron talked the whole show.
That's not true. I listened to it. You talked plenty.
I talked plenty. This week, we will cover off on our profiling question from last week with thoughts from all of you about who is or where is or what happened to Katarina after Reddington emerged from his surgery. We'll also go into the case profile for the triplets or twins or however many kids will show up in a given episode. Then we'll get into Red's rhetoric and, of course, special agent intel from all of you. Remember, if you are having fun with this, just go ahead and over to Patreon. That's Patreon. Patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Fill the fedora, throw a few bucks our way, and get some cool swag for yourself.
Swag? Is that what we're calling it?
Swag.
Swing. I got a question for you.
Shoot.
Okay.
This should be interesting. Unscripted already before the profiling question.
You know how I roll. Yeah. So Special Agent Rory.
Yes.
Who filled in for me most awesomely in past weeks, and after last week, a few of you probably wanted to replace me. The idea was posed to me by Rory, that we should make a bet at this juncture when we don't have 100% certainty of anything in regards to Red Arena.
I just want to clarify that, because it seemed like we were supposed to be at 100% sure that what we were told on screen is the truth, because that's what you believe.
That's what I assert. That we see on screen. I'm not saying that there's not loop. There's so much wiggle room. I don't know why everybody's mad about that. I'm not saying anything in the show is bad. I'm just saying there's plenty of wiggle room to put. There's stuff that happened that we don't see, and we don't see on the operating table. There's all kinds of stuff that is wiggle room. But Rory said, since you both feel so certain one way or the other, you should make a bet on it. And then once whatever the bet is, the results of that bet, you have to follow through on whichever way it goes. So say if it happens to be that Red is Katarina, I would have to, you know, do the podcast wearing a sonnet or something. And if I'm right and it's not Katarina, then I would have to figure out something that maybe you could wear it in a sun. Maybe you could do the podcast in a sundress. I don't know. You're not game on this? What?
Well, I think what's funny
Or wearing one of those beer hats, you know, and we got to do it for like YouTube, and you got to wear one of those beer hats. How about that? That way it's not offensive to anyone.
One of those
annoying beer hats.
Because I would, if Red is not Katarina, I would totally wear the dress, as people have been saying. Like, if it turns out that Troy's wrong, Troy's got to wear a dress and a wig and all that. I would totally do that for the fans. That's totally fine.
I think that would probably be offensive, though, to someone. And yeah, I don't want to do that.
The funny thing is that people are... How to put the, like, after last week's episode, I am not convinced that Red is Ilya. At the same time, I am pseudo convinced that Red Arena is probably dead. I think what last week's episode showed is that you have to be a certain kind of Blacklist watcher to really understand everything that's being shown to you and given to you. A guy by the name of Tom actually wrote up a really, really great analysis of the episode. We should probably put it up as a blog post on the blacklistexposed.com, because as he's walking through it, I mean, he's definitely more on the Red Arena side than the non-Red Arena side.
Oh, I'm shocked you would reference someone who was more on the Red Arena side. This is my shock face. You can't see it, but it's like, oh, Macaulay Culkin-esque.
But taking the Red Arena part of it out, he does a really good analysis of the episode where you can say, if you were watching it in that lens, not the Red Arena lens, just in a lens of, this is a KGB agent who is supposed to do what he does, and he spins stories and makes things happen because he's a spy. If you read the analysis, it's like, I can see how people can see it that way. I can also see people like Aaron who said, hey, I was shown that this guy was the guy. It seems like Ilya's the guy. I'm going to believe Ilya's the guy until I'm told otherwise. Aaron's not saying Ilya is the person.
I did not say that. I 100% did not say that.
Correct. Aaron said that for now, I have to believe what I was shown is the truth until I'm told otherwise, much like the season 4 reveal, which technically was true. We just didn't know that he wasn't the guy in season 4.
Yeah, and I do want to say, a lot of people keep referencing, because of what I said last week, and if you somehow missed it, last week what I said was, you have to believe what's in the show. I don't think they're going to, if they show it, not people, not Liz saying a statement, or Dom making a statement, if they show it to you, you have to take that as canon. I do. I look at it as, you have to take it as canon. That's all. That's what I'm saying. So at this point, they're leading you to believe that Ilya is definitely Red. They're leading you down that path. But I do, there's a gap between when he comes up with the plan, which I believe he came up with because they showed it to us, and when whoever emerged, there is a gap and there are things that we don't see. Now, I personally am led to believe that is Ilya. That absolutely could not be true, because there is a gap. There's wiggle room. Whenever there's wiggle room, there's wiggle room. But somebody brought up when they referenced that when Liz faked her death, they tried to say, well, see, they showed you that, and that was a lie. But A, wasn't a flashback. B, that was a story progression. So she was faking her death.
And C, if you're an astute Blacklist watcher, there isn't a single person that would say that she died. You could see the whole plan evolving around in the background.
You could.
It was pretty obvious what was going on.
If you were somehow duped, and that's great. That's what great television does. The story progressed that way. So they didn't show you anything that wasn't true. She did. Everything that happened on screen actually happened. So the show didn't lie to you. We found out later that Liz lied to Red. Liz faked her death on screen, but it seemed real. So you could say that Ilya, after they left that hotel room, or after they were doing that conversation, something crazy happened. You could say that, and you could make that argument, and it stands, because we don't see it on screen. But if we see it on screen, I consider it canon.
And that's point out, especially because of what happened in the conversation this week between Liz and Wrestler in this episode, that things that are brought up in other episodes can relate to other episodes very, like the whole Liz dying thing. The first thing when Liz died, I immediately went, oh, Fudukimo or whatever the fish was. Like, yeah, you eat the fish and you basically almost look like you're dead, or could die if you eat too much of it. And I'm like, because they mentioned that fish, here's a plausibility. Liz isn't dead. Okay, I'm going to take that as a plausibility. And then let's just see where it goes. This week was the same thing. Liz was like, did I add stuff to the story? Did I overlook some things? Did I whatever? But if you believe what you saw as an FBI agent, you'd believe that this guy is Ilya. But she's even admitting that there's holes in the story. Wrestler's saying, exactly. Hey, but what about this? And what about that? They're being the voice of the audience in the episode. So because of that, you have to add that to the knowledge that you now have from the episode before.
Exactly. The only thing I was saying was, anything on screen, because a lot of people were coming. I've never been tagged so much in my life in anything. And I've been podcasting for 8 years, so that's a peak. People were not happy with my statements, but I stand by them. I'm not taking them back. I don't feel like it's not a negative to say I take the show at what they show me. I feel like that's personally, for me, how I should watch a TV show. And I'm here for my opinion, not here because I want to, be accommodating to the world. That's my opinion. So the only thing I would say is that a lot of people tag me saying that Dom could be, and actually Troy, you said the same thing last week, that Dom could be fabricating the story.
Unreliable narrator,
I believe. Unreliable narrator. And all I will say is, anything he said, I didn't take at face value, only what they showed me. So if they showed it to me, until they give me a reason, and honestly, as a fan, I would have a very hard time re-watching the show if I found out that anything they showed me was not true. I would have a hard time watching the show as an avid fan. I would have a hard time watching any show that would basically lie to the audience. And I don't think they would.
Yeah. And I want to put this out here because I agree with Aaron in a lot of ways in this respect. Ilya was on screen. Ilya is a different person. Ilya was referenced by Dom face to face in Russia. Ilya is not Katerina's male identity that she identifies with. It's not his imaginary friend from when they were 6 years old.
Although I kind of like that one. I'm not going to lie. I kind of like that one. I'm like, that's really cool. I like that idea.
It's a great concept, but it's not what happened on screen.
No,
so
it's not.
If we're going to debate the show, we need to make sure that we spend time debating the facts and the things that were shown and not spinning. I mean, even though you could say that I came up with the arena thing and spun it completely out of control, out of thin air.
Oh, but I would say that. Yes, I would say that.
But there are facts in the show that 100% support it. You can't deny that. But yeah, some of these are just a lot of it's been thrown up, pulled out of the ether, just trying to come up with anything. And that's the fun part of the fan community is that you could come up with these fans. Red's an alien. The cat's actually the cat from Captain Marvel.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that.
You know,
Goose. Goose.
But I think at this point in time, when you get episodes like this, you have to at least come back into some sense of reality and use the show as your factual points for your thesis rather than just coming up with a thesis and then trying to figure it out.
Yeah. And I,
because otherwise it just clogs up the internet and it's hard to find the real conversations.
But I do want to say no hard feelings with anybody who tagged me and yelled at me. I get it. Passion is why we do this thing. So I do understand.
The problem that we have with this, Aaron, is the reason why they tagged you is because you just didn't have a lot of friends growing up. And if you had more friends, you would have played tag more often. So you would have known how to run away faster.
Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum. Yeah, Troy keeps telling me, well, don't respond. I'm like, well, then I'm an a-hole because I'm not responding.
You're already an a-hole. They know that.
Can't win. Just can't win.
Confirmation bias.
But here's a question, like all of that to build to this. So we'll think about the bet idea, Rory. We'll let you know next week if that stands. I think I'm going to give Troy one more week to contemplate. But I want to know, do you believe, because this is what I'm kind of like leaning this way. But after this episode, this week, that they are weekly, as we lead up to the season finale, they are building to a place to ready you for a huge development that will destroy a lot of theories, whatever they are. I feel like last week they addressed Red Arena. I feel like this week they addressed Lizington. And I don't know, is there anything really left? I don't know, but... I really feel like they were trying to say, that's not accurate. This one's not accurate. Get ready because we're going a different way.
I would say at this point in time, honest truth, I am 100% convinced that Red is not Ilya. I am 50-50 on Katerina is alive as Katerina or as Red, because the other 50% tells me that whoever this guy is... And he's not the original Raymond Reddington. Dear God, that man is dead. It's been confirmed 100 times that man is dead. So this is not Raymond Reddington reclaiming his life. That Katerina is dead because this imposter, whoever this is, did kill her at some point in time after the events of what we saw last week. So that's where I'm standing right now. Either Katerina is alive and she's Katerina or Red, or Katerina is dead because of this imposter, but this imposter is not Ilya. Coleslaw.
Well, I've said this for a while. I think Katerina is still alive. I don't think Katerina is Red. I just think she's alive. The only thing where I'm really fuzzy, just this isn't totally opinion. It's just theory. I mean, if you watch Game of Thrones, you can tell you how much theories get you, how far that gets you. Because they go the other way.
If you watch Endgame, your theories are completely shown out of the water, too.
Yep. True. Where I think we are heading, as I think we're heading to a finale where there's a possibility that Katerina is alive and Red doesn't know that because Red did something to her. But I do believe it's a possibility that Katerina is actually a bad person and not the good person we've seen. Because to a degree, I think they've shown her as a good person. Wouldn't you agree?
I think that they've shown you one
in a way.
I think they've shown you that definitively she works for the cabal. And I think she's worked for the Cabal her entire time. I think she was still working for the Cabal and made it look like the Cabal were after her when she was talking to Ilya. But I think she still works for the Cabal. So it's a very good possibility that she's involved in this plot against America and that she's alive.
All right. Excellent. You know, I can't wait to see. This is going to be fun to see where we end up. We should probably get into this episode because we've got two more weeks of interesting turns, I think.
And I think that they're building up to some kind of big, I would hope that they're building up to either a big reveal, a big cliffhanger, because when they did the negotiations, they negotiated 6 and 7 together last year, just had to get the contracts all worked out to get 7. So I'm hoping that they were writing knowing that they had another season.
And I'm sure they did.
Totally set it up. Because I think in 2 weeks, we're just going to literally be left with our jaw on the floor.
Really? I think so, huh?
I hope so. I think that's the way you like totally amp it up. And if it ends up being the final season for season 7, what a great way to start. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, if next year is the final year, I don't know. We have no indication one way or the other. I'm just saying if it is, then it would be nice to have an end game going.
Right.
To Avengers it up, should we go. All right. Let's go into our question. Let's go into our question from last week. What did Katarina do after she left Reddington? Some of our responses. Wendy Davies, I think she's possibly in hiding and could possibly be pulling red strings from afar, or he's actively looking for her but needs Liz in his life in order to find flush her out. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because we saw the Sea Duke character that we got introduced to that we've known nothing about.
Yeah, Sea Duke, maybe that's right. We don't know.
Could be. Rob said she went to the bank to withdraw Reddington's $40 million.
I see what you did there. I'm paying attention. Katrin, I'm not gonna offend you by trying to say your last name. She went into hiding, but she will return in the season finale, and I hope she will be the next big villain. Oh, that would be awesome.
That'd be a great season. Sharon said, I think Katarina betrayed Ilya and took the $40 million and then disappeared.
Yeah, see, now that's something that makes me wonder. I mean, we don't know what happened after. People keep saying we don't know what happened before Red went into that bank. We also don't know what happened after Red walked out of that bank. She could have taken the money and left him for dead. We don't know.
Yeah, because remember, they were friends since they were 6, but she doesn't let her kiss him. She does not let him kiss her. I'll do Aaron again this week. She did not let him kiss her. And then when they were on the bed and he's like, oh, I would do that for you, baby. Then she kisses him on the cheek because she is a master manipulator.
I don't recall the baby line. I don't think that happened. I don't think it happened. All right, Christine, I think that Ilya is responsible for her death on purpose or not. I like how people are calling him Ilya. Interesting.
Monica said she abandoned her family to protect them. Red's Hobson's choice was to follow and protect Liz and let Katarina disappear into the ether.
Interesting.
I chose the child, not both.
So
it sounds like in that comment that Monica, you're saying that Red had to basically choose between Katarina or Liz, and that's what the Dembe's line of what you did to Katarina might come back to.
Well, Hobson's choice is basically take it or leave it. So you take the child or you leave both of them, you know,
right?
In essence. So
or in this case, both of them would die or one could live.
Right. Patty Puig, I think she took over the Cabal and that is why Red can't kill Masha. That's an interesting, well, we'll get to that conversation. That conversation was interesting.
It was.
Yeah. Next week's profiling question, will they actually find the dossier?
Yeah. It's in a rando kid's backpack.
This poor kid. If that kid, well, I mean, kids are usually safe on this show, so I think he'll be all right.
Don't forget, it fell out of the backpack, and it's now literally been chewed up by the family dog, pooped outside somewhere in a park.
I feel like they're not going that direction, but I could be wrong. That's a theory. That's my theory. I don't think they're going that way, but I like Troy. I like where your head's at.
Hey, just so they could do more like investigation work.
I want to see Wrestler digging through poo, trying to get that thing. Kind of like I got a picture of Jurassic Park, just a giant,
dinosaur poo. Oh, that's funny. All right. Well, thanks for all that answer this week. Now, before Aaron finds out he's my twin, let's dig into this week's case profile. But I just have to say, when Aaron was like, this episode is about twins, I'm out.
That's exactly what I felt. I did see the promo on accident. I normally don't watch them, but I just happened to be flipping through channels and it came on and I could tell it was about twins. And my head immediately went, Oh, no. Oh, no. If they try to imply that Red is a twin, I might have to quit. I might have to quit. I hate the twins. I hate twins. It's just, you know, it's a soap opera thing for me. It's just something I've never been behind. But thankfully, this actually was unique in a way.
It was. It was. And it was Guillermo Rizal, so that I can help Aaron out.
We're just going to call him G-Riz. That's what we're going to call him, G-Riz, because I don't want to... Half my family is Hispanic, technically, so I don't want to offend all of them. Because they're bitter. All right, so it's a complicated plot as we begin searching for missing twins, kidnapped 1,000 miles apart and not seemingly related in any way. What it turns out is that both families use in vitro fertilization. They had different teams. There's no way there's a connection. What is going on? But they did share the same embryologist. Dun, dun, dun. I feel like Law and Order should be playing right now. Dun, dun.
It almost felt like an episode of like Criminal Minds or something in the cold open. And they're like, huh, these two kids, 1,000 miles apart. And I literally felt like I went like, brr. Like, I'm interested.
I'm ready to go. How did you like this? Because you're a big fan of these fringe science ideas, concepts.
Overall context, the concept of embryo gene manipulation, all of that, I thought was really fantastic. I think the reason why he was gene manipulating was like a snooze fest. Like, really, climate control? Like, I was hoping it was going to go back to like this. If there's an episode where you can say the warrior gene is something that is super important in the mythology, this would be the time where you could say, hey, gene manipulation to create child soldiers or something that goes like the Project Christmas and Alias, for example. I think that's where I thought this episode was going. And then when it's like, oh, it's just because we have to drink more salt water, I was like, oh, man, it's kind of a letdown.
Man, I kind of like that, though. See, there's a difference between you and I. I'm trying to keep it real, I guess is what the kids say. And you're out there. You're already on Pluto. You're already out there in space with your idea. Like, let's take this as far as we can go. And I'm just like, oh, salt water. That's cool.
Well, I did my own creative profile, and I am the innovator. So I think I think farther. I think three steps ahead. So I'm thinking salt water on Pluto.
I was kind of underwhelmed, but I'm like, really? Salt water. I mean, it logically makes more sense than anything I could think of, but I was kind of expecting space aliens or something.
Especially when he said, drink the solution. I'm like, that was just salt water. I was like, really? I thought there was like some kind of chemicals or something that would react with the gene and it'd be some like cockamamie plan to figure this all out. And nope, just salt water.
All right. Well, it turns out there were three daughters born to different parents. Ultimately, there were three and not just twins. And across the country. Yeah, three.
I loved Ram in that line. He's like, wait, did you say three? Because that's exactly what I did. I was like, wait, he said three.
Scooby-Doo head turn. Twins and triplets across the country have been snatched, so they're being held in like these glass rooms. But this guy doesn't think there's anything wrong with that because it's all an experiment to save the planet. So G-Riz, Dr. G-Riz, it's almost like G-Wiz, huh? I like it. It's catchy.
Sounds like he made a t-shirt.
He took a fertilized egg, split it into three embryos, and then made some changes. What happened is he used a virally delivered editing tool to rewrite their DNA. And when Aram is saying that, I almost believe this is a thing. So it probably is. I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure it's a thing.
Yeah. Basically, this man invented gene mapping, which I would say for all the people throwing some theories around, that would probably exclude him from anyone who could remap bones 30 years ago.
So someone actually think that? Like they gene mapped the bones to make the bones?
Yep. I saw that. Yep. A couple times.
So the burned up bones is actually Ilya's, and this is Raymond Reddington come back to life.
That's somebody. Yes, I saw that. You know what? They introduced like Reed. This is what you get when the next episode you introduce remapping DNA.
But at least that theory is based on facts in the show. So I will accept that it's a good theory.
There you go. Real estate records lead them to Howard County in rural Maryland. And Liz and Wrestler, they go through some traps, some motions, and they finally get there. And things go code white. G-Riz needs Corinne to live. That's the third girl. All the other two girls are sitting there suffering while they're drinking salt water, as you do. And this third one, she's doing fine because apparently she's got 12% better resolve to handle salt water. Here's where it comes down to what Troy was talking about. Turns out Rizal was a hippie climate change nut. Scientist, and as temperatures increase, water sources deplete, and we will need to evolve to survive climate change. So this is a big climate change episode. And apparently, we all need to become Aquaman. Because to process the higher salt content, which, by the way, would be fantastic. Because if I could grow that hair and that beard, I would be more than happy to do whatever experiments this dude needs.
Oh, I was thinking you were talking about just dissolving more salt because I eat so much sodium with fast food today, I could just keep eating all the fast food I want.
Yeah, you would think we could all process plenty of salt. It'd be fine. We don't need any more kidneys. We just need more fries. All right, so to process salt, higher salt content and extreme heat, Homo Salvus, the savior of humankind, is who Corinne ends up being. And at the end, all the kids are fine, even though Corinne was shot. I was actually kind of surprised that a kid got shot.
The biggest question I have from this episode is, like, Sapien, we know, exists, like Homo Sapien. Like, does Salvos in the language of science, does that actually mean, like, salt mammal? Like, I want to know if Salvos is a real term or if they just made it up for the show.
I didn't find much about it, but I think it's in there. It's in science. Yeah. Human Technology. That's a company. Probably shouldn't do this when we're on the thing.
This is where you live research on a podcast.
Nope. I'm not seeing a whole lot of, I'm not seeing a whole lot that I can pull from. So I don't know the answer to that, but somebody, one of our great listeners, I'm sure probably does, so they can fill us in.
Yes. That is feedback at goldenspiralmedia.com. Send it in and let us know if that's a real word or not.
So what did you think about this particular plot? You kind of talked about it a little bit, but in terms of, did you enjoy this turn? Were you hoping for a little bit more mythology stuff? And we did get some endgame stuff. We'll get there, but
yeah. Overall, I put it this way. I enjoyed the hour. I was thoroughly entertained for the entire hour, which is great. I also really liked the going back to the concepts of family, adoption, whether your embryos got switched up, which is for the record, this is why I will never take a drug test, because I don't trust the person that takes my sample to the lab, because that's where things can go awry.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's not that I do drugs. I just will not take a drug test because I don't trust people. And then from that...
Yeah, that's usually what drug addicts say, but that's cool.
But then looking at it, just... I'm trying to go back to like earlier seasons. Like I was talking about this with the missus this morning. And if you go back to like season one, the things that he was doing were tied to finding Berlin, but Berlin was tied to Red, right? In some way. Like the things that we're doing right now, it just seem like we're just trying to move the chess piece from point A to point B to point C to point D. And we're writing characters that just loosely link to, like in this case, it was really about Cotton, right? Cotton's the guy who could find the dossier. That's the, hey, I got this great idea. We got to find the dossier. Who's going to find the dossier? This Cotton guy. Okay. What's this Cotton guy do otherwise? He kidnaps kids. Why are they kidnapping kids? Because climate change and a scientist wants it. You know, it's like when you work the story backwards, it's kind of like, it's an interesting dialogue in your head to think like, what are they talking about in the room when they're breaking this episode? Because in this last season, I think we've done more of that where it's the, we got to do this. So how do we build a story around it versus here's a cool story. How do we tie it into the mythology? So I think that's where I know some people I've heard are getting frustrated about that. I don't know if I care one way or the other, as long as it's an entertaining hour and it gets me to the point of themes, like the family theme was obviously prevalent in this episode. And then of course we get to some resolve of why I spent the hour watching this in the first place.
This was probably a little too fringe for me. I mean, it's fine, but I preface, like I did earlier, anytime you have twins, part of me dies. So there's not much I can do about that. It's not the showrunner's fault. It's a thing I have that I can't get rid of. I've tried for years. It just is. But overall, I like the idea. And I really want to tie it to climate change. I'm the opposite of you. I thought that was a really cool concept. I thought that was pretty interesting. And I saw it coming a little bit midway through.
I would have thought the climate change was cool had we not had Gaia already in the show. Like we've already done climate change.
Well, obviously it's important, Troy. People don't pay attention. I know. Climate change is important.
I know it is. That's why I sit in my controlled climate of my house during allergy season and never go outside.
You should see, and this is a fact. Whenever I go backpacking a couple times a year in the spring, and we've had to push it back 3 weeks from where we used to go 15 years ago because the seasons are completely different than they were 15 years ago.
For sure.
Yeah. Interesting. not much you can do. All right, let's get into characters.
Oh, yes. And I will talk about the character of Minneapolis. Because you're going to be surprised where this is going. But I went to school in Minnesota.
Okay.
And I've been to Minneapolis many a times. I've been in the Hubert Humphrey H Metrodome many a time, watching Twins games and Packers-Vikings games, not for the Vikings, because I'm a Packers fan. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you this. If the show takes place in 2019, when you show the stock photo shot of Minneapolis, you can't use a shot that has the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome in it, because it doesn't exist in 2019.
I was wondering if you saw that.
I literally stopped the show, took a screenshot of it. It is actually one of the photos that will be in the collage on the blog post on the website, because it was like so egregious that I was like, come on, it's 2019 of the show. We got to do better with our overshot shots of Minneapolis.
I was watching that, and that came on. I actually rewound it a couple times and like, this is this year, right? Because are we in a for a second, because originally at the beginning, I couldn't tell. Like, they didn't have a whole lot of discerning elements. And last week was a flashback. So I'm like, are we in a flashback? Because that ain't there no more.
I mean, I feel bad for calling it out, but I was like, I can't let that slide. But I've actually been to Minneapolis and I saw the thing come down.
Well, we're also football fans, so we probably know more than a lot of other people would.
Well, I'm just thinking of Minnesota.
Yeah, think of the Minnesota fans. You're like, no. That's not how that looks anymore.
I'm waiting for the entire, and this is actually funny because if you didn't know about the U.S. Census, from a government perspective, Minnesota is actually on the brink of losing a seat in the House of Representatives. So now you have all these Minnesotans that are like, and we're not going to watch TV anymore because it can't get our city right.
Nobody appreciates Minneapolis. It's cold, man. Everybody's leaving.
They should appreciate it more because they endure all those temperatures up there. But anyways,
By the way, the new stadium is amazing.
It is very nice. Very nice place to watch baseball. And the new football stadium is nice too, except that it looks like a giant sandcrawler from Star Wars at the right angle. And has way too many purple seats. Anyways, getting into music.
So weird.
During the cold open, as Corinne is abducted at the indoor mini golf place, we hear the song Wild Ones by the Crystal Fighters. And then towards the end of the episode, when Harold updates the team on the three girls' status, we hear This Must Be the Place from my favorite band, the Lumineers.
Is that your favorite band of all time?
Not of all time, but I have seen them live in concert.
Ooh, very cool.
Before U2, the Joshua Tree reunion tour. It was awesome. Awesome.
Sounds fun. I love the first song, Wild Ones. I love that song. I don't know why, but that really caught me.
Maybe because you like mini golf. Two things together make it more of a memory for you.
There you go. I like regular golf. Mini golf, I'm not as good at.
Maybe because your ball was blue instead of pink. Anyway,
get the whole ball!
Let's get all these great songs on our playlist over on the website at theblacklistexposed.com. Apple Music, Spotify, both links are there. Go ahead and check it out. You can also get Dave Porter's album. We got the link up there for Dave Porter's album for music from the show, so make sure you check that out as well.
Nice. That'll be fun. All right, characters. So we've got couple things going on as we set up the end game. Anna McMahon, Red, and there's a lot of people saying that they feel like Anna McMahon might be Katarina. She's too young.
Too young.
Yeah, I'm not trying to dissuade, because we really don't try to dissuade people if you have theories based on the show.
Could be Katarina's daughter.
Could be, yeah, that's a possibility. I could see that. I really just think she's just an evil lady in office.
Yes, that happens to have red hair, which triggers red.
Yeah, there you go. See, red. Oh boy. All right, so Red went to the senator, who then went to Anna McMahon,
who was on a date. Did we agree that he was on a date with his friend?
Yeah, he was on a date.
Okay.
And apparently he didn't want people to know about it, but I don't see what the big deal was. He's on a date. Maybe he's married. I don't know. Well, I think he was married. I thought he saw a wedding ring, so maybe that's what it was.
I was actually hoping that when Red took the phone from him, which was brilliant, by the way. I love that, where he's like, oh, it's nice artwork. And plus now I have the guy's phone number. That was great. I was hoping he was actually going to take a picture of the senator and his date, like a selfie, and then post it on the internet or something as like blackmail.
I just love that he was so ballsy to go in there. And then his date was like, that's Raymond Reddington. And the senator was like, oh, snap. I did not realize you were the most wanted man in America. Sorry. And he doesn't seem to go to the police about this. But okay. So what happens is she put cotton onto the kid. I don't, Here, I don't like to point out like big plot holes, but here is one. How does she know that? How does anybody know that kid has? How would anybody know that? Unless I guess maybe he put the flash drive in or something. Yeah.
Or the flash drive has some kind of a GPS tracker on it.
I mean, that's a stretch, but sure. I guess hopefully in the next episode we'll get something because that was a huge plot hole. I'm like, nobody saw that kid get it. Nobody.
I don't think the Cotton was looking for the kid. I think Cotton was looking for the dossier because Cotton didn't look just for children. Because remember, Cotton was also looking for the piece of artwork. So I think they said, go find the dossier. And doing some research and digging and trying to figure out what happened that night and looking at people in the neighborhood and observing he could observe that this is possibly what happened. So
all right.
He actually does investigative work, unlike the FBI.
So we're gonna swallow some disbelief then, because that was a little bit.
It was a little bit of a stretch. A
little bit of a stretch. All right. So she knows Reddington at the end of the episode. She doesn't get a lot in this episode, but what she gets is set up, because the final two episodes, definitely an upcoming episode, is going to be Anne McMahon-esque. So what did you think about her now that she knows, Reddington knows that the kid has it, and now they're in a race against time?
Part of me is like, I don't know what to think of her character now, because at one point I'm like, she's really wicked and I really like her. And then when he did the whole Third Estate thing, I was like, wow, she's a bigger bad guy than I thought. She totally duped the task force in red with throwing the Third Estate file out there, which had absolutely nothing to do with anything, just to throw him off the trail. And then at the end of this episode, she's all like, oh my God, we have to get it. We're going to die. We're going to die by morning. And she seems like completely unraveled over one little thing.
Right.
So the character seems a little bit like, at one point she's really strong and at another point she's really weak. So just trying to see how the character resolves itself by the time this is all done. But the actress is great. Love the actress.
I love the actress. I think she's doing a great job and the character's fun. So I am more interested in Anna McMahon than I am the president. I can tell you that.
Until you find out next week that the president's all like, he's the guy in charge.
Could be. But so far, I just think she's a great bad guy. And honestly, I wish we would have gotten more of her this season.
I really hope that they find out that the president's getting his strings pulled by somebody.
I wonder who that could be.
I don't know.
Mm.
The first lady?
Wouldn't it be ironic if red strings were getting pulled by someone with red hair?
Could be.
Mm. All right, Cooper. He explains. There's not a whole lot going on, but he does have a nice monologue where he explains family isn't about bloodlines. Biology doesn't keep them together because in spite of everything, Red is committed to you. He has faith in you. And you have the same in him. This is part of what I'm pointing at. This and the conversation Liz has with Red at the end, where I feel like they're trying to eliminate certain theories to get you to kind of bring the audience back together on the path they're forging. You know what I mean?
But does that make any sense to you? Do it in two ways. They're saying family is important, but it also doesn't matter if family is biological.
Correct.
So people will hang on the first part of that and say, oh no, he said family is important. They got to be family. And then they'll hang on the other part of it and say, no, they said family isn't biological. So they're not family. They're not related. So it just keeps continuing to fracture the fan base, because the fan base is going to take whatever nugget they want to take and then run with that nugget.
That is true. But I this whole episode to me is 100% saying you don't have to have a bloodline to be connected. This is about your family is your family. That's what I got from it. And that's what his monologue was about. And that's what Liz is telling Red at the end of the episode.
Agree.
So it was a nice speech. Ron doesn't do much this week. Puts the gene deal together. That's about it. Anything else?
He did a little inquisiting, which is different for the Ron character, which was nice. I like the way he did it too. He's like, so you were broke and then you bought a house and a car.
Yeah, and you see Liz and Wrestler outside going, nah, Rom's got it. He's doing fine.
Wrestler's like, no, he doesn't. Let me get in there. Let me do my thing. I want to rough up somebody.
I want to punch somebody in the face. Here's a curious thing. Dembe, not here.
Well, he said he was finding his own path.
Well, I know, but people are worried that this means a similar Samar situation. What do you, where do you think Dembe is right now?
He'll be back. He's getting intel.
Mm.
He's coming up with something that's either going to blow Red out of the water completely and expose Red for who he is, and they'll have a complete falling out, or he's trying to prove something, and then by proving something, he might actually end up hurting himself at the same time, kind of like a Kaplan situation where I'm doing this for you, but because I did this, it's also going to ruin our relationship forever.
What did you think in terms of his conversation with Brimley, where Brimley is basically telling him, you questioned his loyalty and you should be ashamed of yourself, which is what I got. You might have gotten something else from that.
No, that's exactly what I got. I was actually more surprised that Brimley, I mean, if you're a criminal network, how fast does news travel? Does it travel Game of Thrones season 7 fast, or does it travel 24 fast? I'm just
both,
curious.
Both are roughly the same speed, by the way.
How does Brimley know about a private conversation that Red and Dembe have and enough detail about it? That was my biggest question, that whole thing. Because he's like, Red, you done messed up, Red.
It was a nice speech. I liked it.
And for the record, anybody that looks at the Facebook group and sees the spoiler post, I had no idea Brimley was going to be in this episode when I wrote the spoiler post. That was just a complete coincidence. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, Troy's pretty proud of himself for that one. He's like, I might be psychic, just so you know.
Hey, we'll find out in a couple weeks or next year if I am.
Roughly. Oh, I did hear, and I ignored this like the plague, but I have heard that there is like a big spoiler circulating right now.
Really?
Yeah, I have heard that there's a big spoiler, and I don't know what it is. I don't want to know, but I'm just warning everybody that's listening, be weary if you click on anything that says that, because you might find out information you don't want to see. So just be weird. I have no idea what it is. I don't want to know, but I'm just warning everybody because I know we're fans and I personally don't like to be spoiled. I hope you don't, or I'm guessing you probably don't. So just be weary.
Are we talking like 619 spoilers type of thing?
No,
or
there's something
just the name of the final two blacklisters.
No, there's that I have seen, which I was kind of bummed about. Somebody actually ruined that for me on Facebook. Thanks, guy. But, there's something from the finale. I honestly don't know. I didn't read it. I just know I heard it confirmed from a couple people that it looks like it's a pretty big spoiler, and I don't want to know that. So now I'm actively avoiding. You probably won't see me like in the Facebook group much until the finale, I see the finale.
Yeah. I mean, if it's something that big, I'm not even going to look.
Yeah. Don't look. No. Don't look. Cause I've heard it looks like a huge spoiler. I don't want anybody. I'm warning people. This isn't like a go find it. This is I'm warning you. Don't do it.
Remember, this is to get other people interested in the show. If you're already interested in the show, stay away. Stay away.
There you go. All right. Wrestler. Liz tells him she learned the truth about Red. I was actually kind of surprised that she told him.
I wasn't.
Because
Liz has no regard of anybody else's safety. Liz is like, hey, Ilya, what's up? Oh, sorry about those KGB guys. They're going to shoot you in the face now. Hey, wrestler, yeah. I found my grandpappy. Sorry that Red's going to come kill you now.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm just letting you know that I'm putting you in the line of fire. I hope that's cool. Are you cool with it? Because I'm cool with it. Hey, they're close friends. And if you ever want them to get together, you know, they got to be calm.
They got to share honesty. Honesty is the start of a relationship.
That's usually the end of it, too. So, he learns the truth about Red.
You look great in that, honey.
And has some... Exactly! Everybody always says they want the truth, but not that day. Not that day, sir. He has some concern over the validity. Feels like he's talking directly to the audience. Specifically, what are the missing pieces of the puzzle? Liz is grateful. Told him about Ilya. That's the answer that Reddington killed people to keep quiet, he asks.
Really?
Why? Why? He asks. And then he goes on to say some KGB mook was looking into Katarina, and that's why Liz thinks he's keeping it quiet. Is it the truth? Wrestler asks. Does it make sense that this is the answer? He asks. I say to you, Troy, was that not foreshadowing?
I think it was definitely a way for the show to tell you, don't believe everything you hear. Because apparently, according to Aaron, you have to believe everything you see.
That's my opinion. You can go with it however you want. That's my opinion. Yep.
I'm just getting you back for everybody else. It's like, shut up, Aaron.
How do you feel? You feel that way too, right? If you see it, it's good.
Yeah. I mean, when the season four, I go back to the season four finale again, cause that's like, it's a critical moment in the show, because I remember my wife looked over at me and said, are you okay? Are you okay that they just ruined the Red Arena theory? And I was like, what the hell show were you watching? They took a 30-year-old DNA shirt, matched it up with Liz today. The guy's blood that's on the shirt from 30 years ago is the father. That doesn't mean that this guy is the dad. Like, if you didn't see that and put that together, it's like, come on. You know, that's the whole point of the blacklist. They do misdirection, but what they don't do is lie. Red always tells the truth to Liz. So that is not a lie. Raymond Reddington is the father. This guy just ain't Red. This guy just ain't Raymond.
Boom, boom, boom.
So, yeah. So I think that parts of the story that we were told were probably true parts of the story. Katerina and Ilya were in Russia. They talked to Dom. They shot the people. And Ilya has been around since they were six because Dom obviously knows who Ilya is. And Dom probably assumes that this guy is Ilya because that's the way he was telling the story, unless he was truly telling the story as a cover to protect his daughter, which is another possibility. But I think that what I saw in the episode, I can take as events that probably did happen. But once they go into the bank and the surgery happens, after that, I have no idea. So anything today is still fair game as questionable.
Yep. And I like that Russell's asking the questions because he's not just taking it.
Face value.
Yeah. And Liz actually asked some good questions. We're going to Liz. But is there anything else about that those conversations with Wrestler that you want to talk about?
I'm just glad they're having the conversation and that they're working together and they're buddy-buddy cop again. To me, that was season one of the Black. Trace even said to me last night, my wife said, this really felt like a season one episode to her. And we were even talking about how, like, when you're watching this episode, you're kind of putting two and two together and you're thinking like, oh, was Liz like one of these kids and was her genes manipulated? And that's the warrior gene thing. And that's some of the conversations we would have had in season one. So the fact that you're watching it and referencing season one makes it a good episode. Gets back to the roots.
Agreed. I am just happy people are asking questions and following up. And I do think it's pointed to the audience like, hey, there's more to this story than what you saw. There's more that happened that you didn't see yet, that we haven't told you yet. So don't think you know everything yet, because you don't. I really feel like that's what they were trying to say. Then Wrestler does have a really awesome fight later on in the episode. I just want to point that out, because during that fight, the entire fight, which involved a lot of flipping, a lot of hitting the ground, a lot of bouncing around, a lot of swirling, a lot of action, his hair didn't move. Hair was perfect. Looked great.
The whole time.
Sharp.
So the question becomes, did Court, because he was directing, coordinate that fight scene, or did somebody else coordinate that fight scene?
I don't know the answer. I would assume that he just stepped in, did double duty, and then, you know, the hair in jail guy was in the background just making sure everything stayed tip top.
Is that Pepe? Is Pepe the hair gel guy?
I don't know. I don't know if Pepe does the hair. If he does, he does a great job, because that does not move. Not at all. All right. Liz, this is kind of funny. We got a lot more out of Liz than I thought we would this week. She knows the Popeye quote doesn't mean much. She asks actual questions. Okay, I don't know why it took until this episode to start asking them, but thank you, Lord. Thank you for asking appropriate questions. I feel like maybe they caught up to what fans were saying and writing the show, because I feel like she's asking the exact questions you should be asking and explaining herself to Wrestler for why she doesn't ask anything the other ones.
Correct. Yeah. The conversation in the booth, I think, is probably one of the better conversations we've seen between Liz and Red in a long time.
And then later, when she's having her conversation with Wrestler, because we did the Wrestler side, you know, she acknowledges she doesn't get many of the answers she wants. And she says this, which I think is great, because it's also pointing to the audience and saying, just wait, guys, there's more coming. She says, am I sure I know why he guarded his secret? Am I overlooking some of the holes in the story because of there's a sweetness to it? Yes, but it's more possible that it's true. So she's saying that, she goes on to say, you're an FBI agent. If you're investigating a crime or murder, whatever, this solves the case to her. Ilya had motive and opportunity. What do you feel about her responses to Wrestler? Because they can be taken two ways. They can be taken as she's saying, yeah, I know there's a lot more to the story and I don't know it yet. Or they can be taken to say, there could be all kinds of stuff, but I feel like this is what happened.
Well, again, it comes from Liz saying it versus Wrestler saying it.
I understand
it. If Wrestler would have said this conversation, if Wrestler delivers these words specifically back to Liz, I would say Wrestler is a reliable narrator. I believe Ilya is Red, because Liz delivers this conversation and she says that, you know, if you're an FBI investigating this, this would probably be true. I go, really, Liz? You don't ask a lot of questions normally, so I can't really believe that this is where you're standing right now. So, yeah, I don't believe Ilya is Red. So it all, and that's critical. Like, language in the show, we've always talked about that, right? Lexical ambiguity, who delivers the story, who tells what you see. That is all really important with this show. And because Liz gave this, I applaud the fact that they had this conversation, because it's exactly the conversation everybody had last week.
Right.
And all weekend, and literally hours into the wee mornings. So I appreciate this conversation, so that it basically says, you know what, just watch two more episodes.
Well, and why it was important to me is because, you know, we've been frustrated this entire season for how Liz has been written. I think you and can agree on that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So much has happened, and she doesn't seem to have any concept that she needs to ask the right questions. And people get frustrated with, that's a writing thing. That's not Megan's fault.
It's not a Megan thing, no.
Nope. So it needed to be addressed, and here was a good scenario where it was, and I feel like they handled it really well to kind of give you some, okay, all right, at least they're asking. We're not going to get the answers we want yet. There's definitely more to the story. I mean, the show's not over yet. There's definitely a whole lot more to the story we don't know yet. But at least they're asking the questions, and at least she's explaining why she chooses to go forward, you know, without the knowledge she has desperately wanted for several years. At least she has a scenario. And at the end of the episode, you get it even more so. Like, she's willing to accept it because she just wants to get back to her life.
Right. Yep, for sure.
So we're sitting there. I didn't even know that was Agnes, by the way, on the carousel.
Oh, come on. It looked like the same girl from the parachute scene.
I'm just like, it's been so long, I forgot what she looked like. Why are we staring at kids on a carousel? Is this the Punisher? What happened? I don't understand. So... and nobody's going to understand that reference.
Well, at first I actually thought that maybe it was a fourth blonde girl at first. Mm. And then she finally, oh no, it's a brunette. Okay, good.
Maybe it's a fourth blonde girl who dyed her hair.
Ooh.
But she's having a conversation with Red on the bench as she's watching Agnes spin around in a circle. I don't think I even know what family even is at one point, she says. This is with the Cooper scenario, and I'm kind of leading into what she says with Red. Family has nothing to do with biology. Then later we get to Red, and she says, I have a code too. I don't kill people, but it's every bit as important as
Red's code. Yeah.
Yeah. Love wins. So what do you feel about Liz's code?
It's altruistic. I mean, it's something that I think people have to live by. You have to feel like, you know, love is in the air and love is around you and love actually and all that fun stuff. I think at the end, you have to have some... We've always talked about this show as being one that it probably won't have a happy ending at the end. So I think... I think
it'll have a somewhat... It'll be bittersweet.
It'll be... Yeah. It just won't be like they ride off into the sunset together holding hands. So I think this is important to give the hope part of the show. Because if you don't have the hope part of the show... then why are you watching it, right? There's even The Leftovers, which is probably the most hopeless show you could watch on television, still had a glimmer of hope in order to keep you there. Otherwise, you wouldn't stick around. So this is the hope moment in an otherwise dire situation.
And she goes on to say that Red is her parent to her. She believes love wins. She wants to train Agnes the way that he trained her to be able to defeat... whatever comes her way, and that Agnes won't be with Scotty now because she's bringing her home. Agnes is coming back to the homestead as she's back in the show. Don't know how I feel about that.
Don't freak out. Everybody just don't freak out. Okay. This resolves the problem of why didn't you bring your kid home after Tom's killer was taken. This just resolves that. She still has to work. She can still get a nanny. Agnes doesn't have to be in the story. It just does exactly what we wanted them to do, which was, why haven't you gone and seen your daughter? Now she's gone and seen her daughter. Now she's bringing her back to the house. We're good. Agnes' story closed.
I feel like this is one where I'm totally going to defend the show 100%, is they can't win in this regard. You know what I mean?
They brought it on themselves. I mean, they wrote the pregnancy in.
I get that. But I also, I mean, it was tricky. What are they going to do? They tried to make it work. But if they have Agnes in the show, people complain that she's in the show too much. If they don't have Agnes in the show, they complain that Liz is being a bad mom. And I feel like it's just, you just can't win. Personally, no, I don't want Agnes in the show. In fact, you could send her with Scotty until she's 27 years old. I really don't care. But she is part of the show, and I feel like they've probably heard a lot of fans complain about it, and they just want to say, hey, look, Liz is a good character. Let's try to get back on Liz's side. She's asking the right questions now. She's bringing her kid home. She's going back to a level of normalcy for her.
I think the fans would have been fine with her being with Scotty the entire time. The challenge they had with it was the fact that Liz specifically said that you can hang on to her until I resolve this. Mm-hmm. And when I resolved this, it was specifically around finding Tom's killer. And when she found Tom's killer and all of that was taken care of at the end of last season, she should have gone and seen her kid. That's what people were upset about. They're not upset that Agnes isn't on the show. They're upset about the fact that Liz didn't follow through with what she told Scotty. So now she's following through, resolves that problem. Off the map, don't have to worry about it. Agnes is watched by a babysitter, or she's at daycare, yep, or at school, or whatever it is during the day. I think that that's fine.
All right. Lastly, Red. I think we covered everything we needed to. I think that was a great line. He's like, you're not getting anything out of me. You're like squeezing a turnip. It ain't going to happen.
I also thought it was like the show. The writer's, yeah, telling the audience, hey, we're good. Believe, yep, what you want.
We showed you. You take it or leave it. That's up to you. Is very upset with Liz, and he's conflicted. Now, a lot of people are saying that this isn't a conversation that a parent, because, I mean, you're basically either argument. If you, Katarina is Red, or Ilya is Red, or whatever, this isn't a conversation a parent would have with their child. Said that he's very conflicted that he can't kill nor trust her. It's quite the dilemma. He survives because he eliminates anyone who breaks his code. I'm not conflicted about killing you. I'm conflicted because I can't. I can neither kill, nor trust, nor forgive. How did you take this conversation? Do you feel like a parent or parental figure could even have this conversation with their child?
I don't think I'd ever straight out tell my kid that I can't kill you, because I don't think I'd actually think about killing my kid to even have that conversation. However, if I was a parent, and I was this week, and I had an exact situation kind of like this, where it was like, you know, I can't kill you, but I know you're lying to my face right now. And if you're lying to my face, I can't trust you anymore either, because now I have to literally watch you like a hawk and figure out everything that you're doing from this point forward.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you lie to my face, I can't trust you, but I can't kill you. So that makes them a parent. On the other side of the coin, Ilya did say I would love her as my own. So it works for Ilya as well. Or it could be neither Katarina nor Ilya, and it could be complete rando, and for some reason they can't kill Masha, much like the same reason of they can't kill Red, because if they kill Red, the fulcrum comes out. So there could be a reason why this person can't kill Masha also. So that works too.
Yeah, I see it 100% as being a parental-ish conversation.
In an episode about family, I think you have to take it that way.
Yeah, I firmly took it that way. So, yeah, I've seen that a lot, though, where people were saying that it doesn't seem like something a parent could say to a kid.
Oh, no, and you could say it. You could say, I am literally going, I am so angry with you right now that I could kill you. Those words could come out of your mouth. They shouldn't, but they could as a parent. But you can absolutely say it, but there's no way in hell you're ever getting an ounce. What is it? Give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
Yeah.
Is that the saying? That's exactly what happens.
I defer to Chris Rock on this. If you ain't ever thought about killing somebody, you ain't been in love. So it's just part of the game. Red just says a lot what a lot of people would never say, because they don't mean it. They just, you know, think it. Oh, you so lucky I can't. Oh, you so lucky I can't throw you in a meat grinder. You're so lucky. You know, that's just the parental thing. So I got it.
Or a wood chipper for Blacklist fans.
I don't think anybody's going to ask us to babysit anytime soon.
No, I don't think so.
Totally fine with me. I'm not watching Agnes, I'll tell you that. I'll leave that kid at the carousel. All right. He uses Brimley to torture Cotton, which I thought was great, because we find out Brimley has a kid, and I assume that's his kid, and he's, yeah, in training.
Family business. And
he sucks at it.
He wasn't too bad. He just he needs a little bit more push to go the extra mile. That's all. Because he got some info. He didn't get all the info.
Once again, parental connection.
Yes.
Parental connection.
Which just plays in my favor, because the other parent is dead.
Well, it plays in both. It really covers both bases, man.
It does. It does, because like it was my own. I know.
So we've got that. We already talked about the conversation he had about Dembe. And so I feel like it's been established, or at least to me, that is the reason why Dembe left, is he felt the fact that you questioned my honor was too much for me.
For sure. You said that to me a few times.
Yeah, well, I did, but I'm just saying, I feel like it's more confirmed now. This seems to be the direction that it went, and Red is just like, huh? I forgave him. I did everything right. He did everything wrong. And then Brimley's like, no, it's kind of like on you, man. So,
Lipstick on a pig.
Yep. I was actually really surprised he would say things like that to him. We find out that Anna McMahon hired Cotton to find the dossier, which Bastion Moreau gave the dossier to the kid before he died. I still don't know how we found it, but we're just going to go with it.
Let's be clear. He did not give it to the kid.
Exactly.
He just dropped it in the backpack.
Thank you. But the way it was implied was like he gave it to this kid, and that's how this kid. How does anyone in the world know that this kid has it? I mean, he basically just dropped it in there as he pickpocketed him, essentially. Gotta swallow it. Agnes has gotten so big. I agree, because I totally thought it was not Agnes. Then there's some more lines, some choice dialogue. Parents don't stay mad at their children and grandchildren. And then she goes on to ask, like, any surprise how I am? Like, were you involved with my growing up? He says, if you want to know, if it was a surprise you became an FBI agent, the answer is no. And she basically doesn't say a whole lot after that. But he does go on to say that Sam did what I told him to, which is an interesting phrase.
Especially that we saw Katarina talking to Sam on multiple occasions, not Ilya, in the show.
Not yet. Nope, not yet. But again, I say, why would we have? Why would we have?
We would see Red talking to Sam, which we have seen happen before.
Mm-hmm. We have seen Red talking
inferred
to Sam,
off-screen,
just not in the
past. Because Red was the one that told Sam to go find Kaplan, to have Kaplan come to have the meeting. So yes,
see, there's possibility. All right, and he's worried. I feel like he looked worried when she said she was bringing Agnes home. How did you take that look?
So did the whole audience. Oh, crap. Agnes is back.
Maybe that's what his look was like. Oh, she's back. I mean, I was kind of digging, looking at her from afar. Like, that's my kind of parenting. That's what I've done before. And I excel at that. I don't want to be involved daily.
No, he did look like he was like, I don't know if that's such a great idea. I got that too.
Yeah. So again, I reiterate, I do feel like they are firmly establishing that Liz looks to him as a parent. And he doesn't really say anything to that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So is there any part of you, because I know we talk a lot about Red as Katarina, Red as Ilya, Red as whatever. Is there any part of you that feels that Red is not a parental figure in some way?
Oh, no. He's acting as the parental figure or as a parental figure. But there's definitely a parental tone to it.
Okay.
Which then plays into the Katarina or Ilya concept.
Or if you read DNA of the Bones, Raymond himself, I guess.
Come back from the dead, I suppose. Yes.
Yep. I mean, but...
I will say this. If that were to happen, because I think that with the show, it is 1% plausible. Katarina would be 1% plausible. Ilya is probably 98%.
I don't think 98%, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. It would be a really cool twist. Because it does go back to that they showed you the burns on his back at the end of season one. I tend to think that those burns are a MacGuffin, and it's from a completely different fire to throw people off of the scent. But if it was burns from the fire because they pulled him out of the fire, and it was for some reason he was able to come back from the dead, then it would be kind of an interesting twist. I'd love to see how they can explain that one.
Especially since John said he was dead. But in the show...
And because Katarina said he was dead. Held him in my arms.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nikki Six was dead for like 2 minutes. So from a heroin overdose, and he came back and wrote a book. So it can happen.
Nikki and Paolo were dead, and then they came back to life as they were getting buried alive.
See? Things can happen, I suppose. I feel like that would be a stretch, but so are a lot of things. All right. So by the end of the show, it's a race against time to get to the dossier. Now, we already know that's coming. So that's coming up. Now, I want to bring up the in memory of John Gallagher and Iden Commission. Can you kind of go into who those gentlemen were, because we got an in memory of, and I think we should acknowledge that.
Absolutely. Both John and Aiden had been with the show forever, since like the beginning. So when you think about 2013 and how long the show has been, over 6 years now, how many babies have been born, right? But yeah, Megan mm-hmm. had a baby, Peppy had a baby, weddings that have happened, other people that have passed away. I think it's just, it's become a great family, you know, between the cast, the crew, the writers, and everybody. And in this case, losing two longtime people that have been with the show since the beginning is a really tough loss. John was a first AD on many an episode. He also worked on movies such as The Bone Collector, Hard Target, and Passenger 57.
Yes! Always been on black.
Love that great movie. Yeah. Aiden was a member of the sound team and helped mix the episodes in post.
Awesome.
Not only did he do work on The Blacklist, but he was on a number of other television properties and even helped with the sound on Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Yeah, one of the rare good Transformers movies.
That's right. Blacklist family is a little bit smaller today. John and Aiden will be missed. So why don't we just take a second now and just pause a moment for them and their families.
Okay, we want to take a second to say thank you to those of you that are supporting the show by going to Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Interviews are posted there, as well as the panel from C2E2, and then after the panel, special podcast that you can't get anywhere else. If we hit $500 a month, we will bring back the Blacklist Exposed apps, and if you can make it happen to hit $1,000 a month in support, we will do the show live on camera.
Wearing beer hats, apparently.
Ha ha! Beer hat or, what did I say?
You're thinking like the thing with the cans and the straws?
Well, that's for you.
Okay.
But mine was more of a sonnet.
A baby sonnet.
Yeah.
Like Belle, like Bo Peep.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
There you
yes.
go. All right. Every that's bit of support helps. And we're excited that Doug's an official blacklister. In addition, we want to thank our syndicate members, Marilyn and Lacey. Also, our task force members, Leonie, Brandon, Jim, Lorelei, Carol, Stacey, and Florian. They keep growing by the day. All those guys get awesome stuff, including a Blacklist Exposed t-shirt. You've seen them in the Facebook group. So if you want one, $15 a month will get you there super, super quick.
Also, shout out to Lisa, Kevin, Paulette, Priscilla, Isabel, Richard, Nell, James, Judy, Rachel, Tony, and Sharon for being amazing special agents for supporting us and the podcast.
That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Fill the fedora, get some rewards for yourself, and we'll be back with Red's Rhetoric right after this.
Welcome to Veronica's Marshmallows. I'm Amanda Singh.
And I'm Angela Wallach. And we're a weekly podcast which investigates the cases, mysteries, and relationship dynamics in the show Veronica Mars. Don't worry if you've never seen the show, we won't spoil future episodes.
To discuss your theories on the show's mystery and vote for your favorite quote of the episode, visit our Facebook group or on Twitter at @VMarshmallowPod.
New episodes release every Tuesday, so visit us at veronicasmarshmallows.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Remember, it's all fun and games until one of you gets Veronica's foot up your ass.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we feature two great scenes from Red himself, and then you get to vote, which was your favorite, on our website at theblacklistexposed.com. Just look for the post for Guillermo Rizal. First this week, Red talks about what it takes to be a criminal.
I live and work by a very strict code, built on loyalty, justice, trust. I survive because I eliminate those who betray it. Up until now, no one has been spared, not even my closest associates, not even Kate Kaplan.
So that's what you're conflicted about? Whether or not to kill me because I betrayed some code?
You can mock it because you live in a world with institutionalized codes where order has already been imposed by powerful forces outside of yourself, where there are laws and rules for everything. I live in a world with no laws, no rules, and certainly no order. So I have to impose my own. I'm not conflicted about killing you. I'm conflicted because I can't. Because I can neither kill, nor trust, nor forgive.
Secondly, Red seeks out another fencer to lure his prey.
Good afternoon. I have an item for your catalog.
Got the wrong place. I fix clocks.
Fat Joe says you do more than that.
Don't know any Fat Joe.
He told me to tell you there are moles in your garden.
You say what I should do with them?
Call the exterminator.
Let me see the item. That's a photo of the item.
And this is a suitcase filled with 50,000 in unmarked bills for putting it in your catalog.
I fence items, not photos of items.
There's another suitcase for letting me use your back room to talk to the buyer.
You got a lot of suitcases.
Do you know who I am?
Yeah, the guy with a lot of suitcases.
How many will it take for you to circulate the photo?
Do you have the item? Or are you just using me to smoke out the guy who wants to buy it?
Four suitcases, no questions, and you throw in the mantle clock. I'm a sucker for Limoges.
Which was your favorite this week? If you live your life by certain rules, vote hashtag red code. Or if you love trapping your enemy over collectibles, vote hashtag red suitcase.
All right, Special Agent Intel, George Nauman. This is basically what you guys thought of the episode. I don't remember seeing anything last week or Dom hinting that Ilya was Cabal, so not sure why Liz thinks that. Wrestler sure seems suspicious of the entire Ilya story. I found it interesting the IVF clinic was named New Dawn. Rasyet.
Yeah, that's right, because Rasyet was Dawn. That makes sense.
Yep.
Was Ilya Cabal? I don't know if we ever got confirmation that they were, but he did say that it would be enough money for us to run away from the Cabal. So you could imply he was Cabal, but I don't know if they ever confirmed he was Cabal.
Right. I would say it's more of an implied than it was a confirmation. Yeah, again, those are words, so I don't take those at face value.
Sure.
I would like to say, though, that's an interesting connection, the New Dawn thing, because I thought the same thing, and I got a little scared for a second, because if they were twins, I would probably lose my stuff.
Oh, my gosh. But Twins is a great movie, though.
That's the only exception to the rule. I just don't. It's so soap opera.
No, there's a second movie. I just can't name what it is because it gives it away. Nicole Valdez said, okay. I thought this episode was pretty boring. Maybe just because last week was so good. I also feel like Dembe being gone is a huge void in the show. I miss Dembe already.
I would agree the character moments were strong here, but the overall arc wasn't as exciting as I probably would have liked. But I also don't get into Fringe science like that, and I don't like Twins. So,
which is also why you haven't finished Fringe. Katrin said, how stupid is Liz?
That's true.
Whoa, strong.
Alternate reality, man. As soon as it went there, I'm like, ah.
Yeah, why not telling Wrestler the apparently big secret about Red? Smack my head. But even Wrestler is not that stupid to buy this story, but he will ruffle feathers again by checking out the name Ilya Koslov.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy with the children, but maybe that was a hint about Liz's past childhood. The Chosen One, potentially.
Yeah, I don't think... the Chosen One is an archetype that can be dangerous to play with. I don't feel like that's what it is, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's not like she's like Superman or something.
Right. Bianca, well done episode considering that it follows Rasyet. Love the Blacklister and am glad to see that they can still come up with unique and Blacklist-worthy people. They had me worried for a while. I'm glad to see this character growth in Liz, and I think they found the perfect way to resolve the Agnes debacle once and for all. I would agree because we've struggled with her character and that all season, and I felt like this was a good way to handle that.
Agree. Susie said, I was disappointed with this Blacklister. I feel that people like the Stewmaker, the Courier, Floriana Campo, etc. were actual Blacklisters. Criminals who are so notorious that the FBI doesn't even know they exist. People that fit into some overarching plan for Raymond Reddington and his mission. People like this guy just seem like they are crazy people who think that they are doing is saving the planet. Same thing with the Bug Guy. Not so much criminals as part of a grand plan, but just crazy righteous people on a mission. I know this person was somehow tied to Anna and the dossier, but still seemed pretty low level to be given a Blacklist number at all.
I agree with that, actually. Yeah? No?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, as a Blacklister, it's still connected to Red because he had to figure out... Yeah, because of the whole dossier thing and the Anna McMahon. So that part still works. But yeah, he's just a guy trying to save the planet. I mean, I do my part. I throw my water bottle in the recycling bin.
I try to remember. Let's see.
Do better by not using a water bottle to throw away, but...
See? I drink out of a water cooler. Yeah. I'm really trying to help the planet. And I also indulge in a lot of fried foods. I'm trying to help prepare my body for salt intake because I care about my life. Rose, I thought the episode was great. Boy, these are like so hot and cold, right? I mean, they just flip completely from one to the next. The Blacklister was tied to both the rescuing children and the research, medical research themes, which we don't totally understand yet. Red is still very closed off as Liz opens up to him, which is frustrating to me, but also keeps me on edge. I love Wrestler's skepticism of the Ilya reveal, just as I love Wrestler, period. I love that everyone is so certain they can retrieve the dossier flash drive from a kid's backpack weeks later, just like the Fulcrum was in the rabbit for over 25 years. Couldn't agree more.
I like the parallels and correlation, though. It's kind of fun.
Apparently, there's a camera on that kid, and he just, like, saw him drop it in there. I don't know. What? Suspension of disbelief. Well, that's going to conclude this episode. I don't really have anything more to add to it, unless you do, Troy.
No, I'm good. Let's go on and get out of here and get ready for the final two.
We got two more coming. The next week is the penultimate one, so don't look at the name of the show if you don't want to be spoiled there, but I think you can probably guess where we're going. That'll conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at the Blacklist GSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed when possible, and we use the show's hashtag The Blacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or your favorite glow-in-the-dark mini-golf place. I like glow-in-the-dark mini-golf.
Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to fancy... Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. Will they find the dossier?
Maybe. I still say there's a tracker in it. That's the only way they can find it. There's got to be a tracker in it.
They're definitely going to find it. Otherwise, this season, wouldn't that be a whiff? They just get to the last episode. We couldn't find it. Sorry, guys. Let's all go home.
Well, you could say that in the quest for finding the dossier, they uncover the plan at the same time. You could make that work.
That would be a nice twist.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. Well, thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
All right. Take care. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.